Well, good morning. I am Tim Morrison, the host of Right Here, Right Now, a weekly internet radio show. We interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you by Right Choice Services, a company that works with individuals as they write their first book or their second or even their third. My co-host for the program is Stone Payton, a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio. Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning, but my new claim to fame, you know, yesterday I worked with Monica Pearson. We emceed the best and brightest of Atlanta companies to work for. That was a lot of fun.
And you had on a suit?
Almost.
Almost.
I went to the fat end of the closet, and I got a sport coat, and I got some slacks. But we had a great time, but we took our mobile unit out there.
Oh, you did the remote thing.
Yeah, and we interviewed some of the winners, and we interviewed a lot of the participants and the people organizing the event. So we just we had an absolute blast. It was a lot of fun.
Well, did any of that get put on TV?
Probably, yeah.
You didn't want to watch to see, though, huh?
No, but I know it's all over the radio, man.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm so glad that you decided you could still come in and help me today. That's,
well, I just wanted you to know that I'm a vital cog over there, too.
Well,
I love that title, vital cog.
I know you
cog.
Do. I keep it in there. I keep it in there. Well, last week I started what I hope to do every week is I want to say hello to some people because I want folks to know that we really do have listeners. And I happen to know this morning, because these people email me, that Shelley Sharp from Plymouth, Minnesota, is listening in. She refers her writing friends to me. In fact, one of them is Marcia Elon, and she's in Chanhassen, Minnesota, and Marcia's listening this morning. Keith Weiland is a beekeeper and a minister in Howards Grove, Wisconsin. He's actually my best buddy from seminary. Tricia Malloy, whom you've met.
Right, right.
She said she'd listen today. I'm glad. And she's from Marietta, Georgia, author, business consultant, speaker. And then Janet Litherland Barnes lives in Thomasville, Georgia. And Janet is the founder of Right Choice Services. She's been my editor. And can you believe, Stone, that Janet cast me as Conrad Birdie in 1966 when our high school course presented Bye Bye Birdie? Picture that. Me. Oh, man, that was not a typecast. Well, we better get to business here. Our theme this morning is, which comes first, a career or a book? Does a business person write a book based upon his or her business perspective and expertise? Or does a business person write a book and use that as entry to a new or different or expanded career? And our guest this morning will provide the clear and definitive answer of yes. Or at least I anticipate that is what we will hear. And so we're going to begin with Cindy Light. She is the CEO of Culturally Speaking U.S. China. She's a graduate of Peking University, the Harvard of China. She's been a university professor. She actually worked as a business policy consultant for the Chinese government. Welcome, Cindy.
And thank you for having me.
Sure, it's a delight to have you. And you're the guest this morning that's in a business that's going to write a book or two or three or four, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so let's jump in with some fun stuff. You came to this country about 13 years ago.
Yes.
Knew no one, and maybe knew yes and no, but beyond that, didn't know English.
You're right.
Why did you do that? And tell us about some of the cultural shock you experienced.
Oh, my God, everything. That's actually, I learned when I didn't speak English at first. So everywhere I went, I didn't have anything to say, and I watched people.
Oh, my.
By watching people for years, I really noticed Americans handle things. It's very different than Chinese. Mm-hmm. We just have a different cultural background, and we believe in different values, cultural values. So naturally, we handle things differently.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, did you learn anything from television? Could you see in the movies where people are picking up a new language and they watch television?
Oh, yeah.
And then you wonder, it's really critical what they see on TV. So, like, if the first thing they see is The Sopranos.
Oh, man.
You are. Oh, my God. You're so right. And I watch, one of my favorite shows is Judge Judy.
Mm.
So I watched so many Judge Judys for period. For many years, I thought that's how Americans live. Then later, when I get a chance, met better people, I said, oh, that's just a small, hopefully, it's a small percentage of Americans. You're right.
That's funny.
Well, you know, I lived in Ghana, West Africa, for 3 years, back from 1978 to 81. And one of the things that I learned right away was the critical nature of hand gestures. You know, in America, when we want to talk about how tall an individual is, we'll show with our hand and we'll put our palm face down. They're about this high. Well, in Ghana, if you did that, that meant the person was dead. So if we had to talk about or wanted to talk about height, we always had to put the palm up, and I really had to get used to that. And another, the fawns, the olifons, the thumbs up, you don't do that in Ghana, unless you really, really, really want to insult somebody. Those are obviously vivid memories for me. What kinds of gestures or things did you encounter that shook you up a little bit?
One thing, and one day this lawyer and wanted me to help him for his client as the interpreter. That's after many years. Mm-hmm. I already be able to speak two languages. Mm-hmm. I said, great, I'll help you. The next thing he said, you know, what happened if you dead? I was like, what do you mean? He said, what if I can't find you? If I get built up a business, you're the one making all those connections and making this conference calls.
Mm-hmm.
He meant to say, what if you quit or anything happened to
you?
He just said, what if you dead? Something like that. Maybe to Americans, that's okay. But you never, 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 never tell a Chinese, what if you dead? Or what if something happened to you?
Oh, my. Okay. That's critical because we do that in our culture. Well, tell our people or tell our listeners more about what it is that you do as the CEO of Culturally Speaking U.S. and China.
I do two things. I'm a consultant and speaking, and basically serve two kind of people I love most, American people and Chinese people.
Mm-hmm.
I help American companies to understand the Chinese culture, especially in communication, because many small misunderstanding could cause huge damage in business,
absolutely.
And the people don't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
That actually was the burning design made me write this book I talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
On another hand, I help Chinese people to better learn better way to fit in American society,
okay.
To live with their dream. Many Chinese people moved here, live in America, but do they actually live their dream life? I don't know. Because many, many of them just lived in a very small society in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're afraid to reach out. So for those people, I want to help them to reach out, really enjoy in this international country.
Okay. Now, if I have a business that I'm thinking about doing business with China, it would be wise for me to contact you and learn what I should and shouldn't do. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, do you have connections as well or people in your network that help us set up the business side of things? So, for example, if we wanted to open up a studio in Shanghai,
mm-hmm.
Could you help us navigate that process or get us in touch with people that can help us work through the right people so that we could even make that happen?
Yes.
I mean, to me, that's critical.
That's critical.
That's marvelous. You must just be just as busy as you can be.
Yes, I'm very busy.
And we like that, right? And
yes.
Well, talk to us about the book that you're thinking of doing or doing, because you and I had a phone conversation a week or so ago, and you outlined four books. And I thought, man, this lady she's driven. But what would be your first book? What are you working on?
The first book is about communication with the Chinese.
Okay.
With no mistakes.
Well, talk about that. What are some mistakes we make?
Okay, what the mistake we can make? For example, I was talking about the lawyer said you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. one of the mistakes we make is that we don't aware, as American, I'm not saying that in bad way, because we're a strong country. I'm talking we, because I am American Chinese, mm-hmm. so I actually, in case China and Americans start a fight, I have to protect American, because I swear that day.
Okay.
Right, so I hope they never get in trouble between those two countries, so I have to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, and many people has no awareness of other people has their own culture. I noticed I gave you this story. In 2007, me and my Chinese friend went to a bank. Basically, she had $500,000 check and she wanted to deposit in the bank. Mm-hmm. The closest one was a
nice friend to have. I don't have any friends with $500,000 checks. We'd like, can we have your friend on the show?
I'll introduce you.
I'd like very much to meet your friend.
So anyway, but that was a long story. How she get the money? She got divorced finally and get final payment of $500,000. So we wanted to put in the bank. We walk into Wachovia Bank, which is close to the corner. And when in there, a very nice financial planner, a senior financial planner welcomed us to his office. Everything went well. She started fill up the paperwork. Then right before she signed it, and he asked who is a beneficiary.
Oh.
I mean, this is a natural thing for American business people to ask. You know, nothing wrong to ask that. But she has a problem to answer that. It's like, oh my God. In her heart, she was thinking, I just started my new life. You know, don't talk about a beneficiary.
Uh-huh.
So she basically simply said, can we just get it done without worry about that? But the financial guy was really serious to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
She pushed farther. And of course, Chinese mind and American mind at that time thinking about different things.
Exactly.
And he is doing his job to protect this woman.
Mm-hmm.
But this woman thinking about, stop talking about this. I'm not going to die. So in the end, we left.
Oh,
without, I mean, he already got the money in his hand. Then he lost the business because of that.
Mm.
After that happened, I couldn't sleep for night. I was just thinking, how many financial planners, lawyers, business owners, they know their business well, but they have no clue about the cultural sensitivity and how people make decisions, especially thinking from West culture and East culture, they're so different. Why they get up left, and that poor guy had no idea.
He had no idea. And you're a critical cog to help that. I have a sister-in-law who's Korean, and she has worked for American banks most of the time that she's lived in the United States. And the Korean people come to her because she's established a reputation of being trustworthy, and she does exactly what you've just talked about, help American bankers keep from offending Korean clients or potential clients. So that's a little picture of what you do. What are some other things, that cultural things, or just what all? I'm fascinated. What do you do? How do you make bridge this difference? And you're going to be writing about them in your book.
So yeah, that's why I write this book. So the intention of this book is helping Americans, I would say really non-Chinese Westerners, but especially Americans, because Americans are so used to, they are the ones set up rule.
Mm-hmm.
What you really need to do, what they think you should do.
Mm-hmm.
But other people don't know what they think on their mind. So they're not match up what they want other people to do. So many misunderstanding has happened between these expectations.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
Right. So this book will serve as our insider's GPS, human mind GPS.
Oh, I like that.
Do you like that?
I like that.
To take Americans to a tour, not only I will tell them what other do's, what other don'ts, but the reason. why that behave Chinese people behave like that, why they make a decision like that, mm-hmm. based on their value, their cultural value.
Okay.
Anything is from common sense. So if you understand the common sense, then you naturally will know what to do, what not to do.
Well, that would be
right?
good. Now, is there a difference between the mainland Chinese and those on Formosa?
They are different, not only from mainland China, Taiwan, or Cantonese.
Mm-hmm.
They're also different. If you go to China, China is east part China, north part China, just like United States, it's almost the same size. So there are difference between one area to another area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Chinese as a whole, even Chinese lived in other part of country.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Chinese live in Chinatown in San Francisco.
Sure.
Chinese live in Chinatown in New York. Their roots are the same. So this first book is about communication with Chinese with no mistake, which I write Chinese as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The second book I will write about different areas.
Okay.
It's going to be more detailed.
I think that's a critical piece that you lifted up, because somehow or other, I think we Americans, when we deal with foreigners, say, well, China, there must be a way of Chinese. But the example I often use in America, depending upon where I live, I need to know whether I should order a grinder, a hoagie, a Subway, you know, or a poor boy. And they're all the same thing, but if I ask for the wrong thing in the wrong part of the country, I'm going to get strange looks. And you've got the same thing in your culture then.
You said this. Here's the interesting question. I have a friend. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend is from mainland China. He married to a guy from Vietnam, but he's Vietnamese Chinese. So he speaks Chinese. But the wife speaks Mandarin. Husband speaks Cantonese. They met here in United States, right? The
mm-hmm.
guy doesn't know how to write in Chinese. So husband and wife cannot talk to each other in Chinese because the Cantonese and the Mandarin is totally different
oh
animals.
My. So they have to talk English.
English.
Oh, my. And if they have kids, they can teach each of their kids their separate languages and have secrets.
Yes.
We don't want to go there. Well, when you're in the process of writing, when do you think the book will be out? What's your hope?
Okay, with my hope, and I finished my first manuscript mm-hmm. draft, and now I'm doing the editing. I gave myself a deadline of 4 months
okay.
to finish the editing. At the same time, I started. Just this week, I am writing a book proposal.
Oh,
so
my
goal, my number one goal is to get a publisher, which is I really think in their market there. It's like
sure.
an urgent need
mm-hmm.
to understand how to communicate with Chinese. But just in case I can't find a publish
mm-hmm.
by end of the 4 months after I finish my editing,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the bottom line is I can just go ahead and publish by myself.
Sure you can.
Right.
Sure,
so
can.
That will be by end of this year. I think it will be a nice Christmas gift.
Oh, absolutely. That was a good plug. But let's plug even more. People want to contact you. They want to hire you to help them with their relationships with the Chinese. They want to get your book when it's available. How should people contact you?
Yeah, the easiest way is to call me at 404-988-9655. I say one more time, 404-988-9655. And I have a website called cindylight.net. Cindy, C-I-N-D-Y. LIGHT.net, and email me will be cindy@cindylight.net.
Good. Well, Cindy, I'm going to ask you to sit tight with us while I interview our second guest, and maybe we'll open up the mics later for conversation, okay?
Absolutely.
Great, thanks. Well, our second guest is David Wright. He is President and Chief Marketing Officer of W3 Group, an Atlanta-based marketing and SEO company. David has a book called Get a Job, Your Guide to Making Successful Career Moves, and that emerged out of your own job search experiences, I believe, didn't it?
Right, exactly.
And then when his book was published, you leveraged what you learned in marketing this book to attain a top position for it in Google and other search engines, and that just kind of segued into a career helping businesses do the same. Am I right on that?
Yes, it's pretty exciting.
So talk to us about that. Job search creates a book, creates a new job, creates your president. We like that story. Share it.
Well, going back a number of years, I was living and working in Tokyo at the time, and I was in the middle of a job search myself, and I started getting together with other friends who were also looking for new positions, and we would exchange resumes and basically just tear them apart, put them back together, and make them stronger and more powerful and more effective. And as it turns out, that was something I was really good at. The next thing I knew, people were starting to approach me for help and tips and advice, and one day it dawned on me that I could help a lot more people than I could ever help one-on-one if I put that into the form of a book.
Wow. And this is quite a book. I'm holding it. You know, people who listen regularly know I usually say, and I'm holding it in my
You're
hand.
You're always doing it. You're always thumbing through a book on the show. We should probably get like a video camera and put it next to the audio or something.
That would be good. That would be good. You have more stuff in here than I have ever seen in any kind of job search book. What was your intent?
Well, to make it as comprehensive as possible. I mean, it took me about 3 years to write, and I noticed that a lot of the books out there didn't really follow the job search process from start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
So I tried to make it very thorough. About a third of the book is resources.
Oh,
niche job boards, recruiters worldwide, lots of other information. And the book as a whole is 346 pages, so it's not exactly a tiny Cliff Notes style book.
No, we could use this for some arm exercises if we wanted to. But what I like, you know, books have a title and a subtitle, and then you've got a sub-subtitle, a practical hands-on manual packed full of resources, insights, ideas, strategies, and tactics that work. So you can, too. I like that. So you can, the work, so that you can, too. Whether you're between jobs, fresh out of school, changing careers, making an international career move, applying for a better position in your present company, or planning to change companies, Get a Job can help you make your move faster and more effectively. That's quite a claim.
Well, that's part of the great thing about it, is it's really held true for a lot of people. One of the greatest things that I've experienced about writing that book is hearing those success stories of people that I've helped.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you use the book today, or don't you? You don't need to. You're comfortable.
He's got a job now.
He's got a job out of it. Yeah.
Well, if you think of it, at its core, a job search is marketing.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing now is marketing. There are different spins on it, but at its core, it's designed to, in the case of a job search, help you market yourself.
Okay.
To the buyer, per se, the company that ends up hiring you.
Okay. So you said that you marketed this book yourself.
Right.
And you bumped it up on Google. What were some of the secrets that you, tricks or whatever you did?
Well, search engine optimization is what it's called. It's basically the group of techniques and tactics to be able to get a website up to the top of the search engines.
Mm-hmm.
On the results page. So, for example, if you're searching for Get a Job book, my book website is number one on Google, Yahoo, and Bing. And there's a number of different factors in that. Part of it is the website itself. There's basically two components of it that most people think of. There's actually a third. But the main two are on-site optimization, which is everything from your domain name to the code behind the scenes mm-hmm. on the website to mm-hmm. the text and video and so on the page itself. Then there's also the off-site SEO, which is basically links back to your site from other sites.
Okay. Now, when you were doing this, you were wanting to get your book up there, make some money on it. When did it come to your realization that I could make a job out of this?
Well, I think the initial seed for that was when I was having a conference call with one of my mastermind groups, and I didn't realize it yet at the time, but one of my fellow mastermind group members was online, and he searched and told me that, hey, you're number one on Yahoo. And I didn't realize this yet.
Oh, my.
And I looked, and it was out of over a billion results.
Oh, my.
And I was thinking, that has got to be a pretty marketable skill. And there's a lot of companies, especially small and medium-sized businesses, that have no clue how to effectively market online.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm able to help them grow their businesses, help their families. I love working with small and medium-sized businesses especially because you really feel like you're really helping a family too.
Sure, sure. And so you lift up what I like to stress to people, that there are a lot of SEO companies out there, but they each have a different perspective, and your perspective comes out of the fact that you didn't start off in life wanting to be what you are now, but you saw it happen in your own life and you were able to make something of it. You know, I didn't start off wanting to be an author or doing what I'm doing now, but look at what I am now.
Exactly. Mm.
But that's exciting. And I encourage people to always look at what is that bit of knowledge that they have that somebody else doesn't. It's the perspective, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, do people start... Is it at a point now where people understand that, hey, we probably ought to do something about this SEO thing, and they're searching you out? Or are you going out and actively marketing to people and saying, hey, you really ought to consider this idea of SEO, or is it a blend?
It's a bit of both, actually. A lot of companies realize that the Yellow Pages doesn't work anymore. Other sources, other ways to market a business are either more or less effective, depending on what they are. And not every style of marketing is right for every business. So a lot of them have an idea of what they want to do. Some of them will think, someone will come to me and say, hey, I want a Facebook page. Okay, well, let's step back for a second. Why do you want it? What do you want that to accomplish? How exactly is that going to fit into your business? Mm-hmm. You've got to look at really what makes the most sense for the business itself.
Just don't put it together and slap it up there, but have a purpose for it.
Well, there's two sides of that coin. It's especially with online marketing, the longer you're actually online, that's one of the factors that the surgeons look at to determine where you rank. So there's nothing wrong with getting something out there and making adjustments to it and tweaking it and experimenting and seeing what works and what doesn't. It doesn't have to be perfect the first time, but if it's out there, you can always improve on it.
Okay. That speaks to me and my company website. So boy, I needed that
makes
assurance.
You feel a lot better.
Oh, I do.
Now, SEO, is it more important for some industries, more critical to their success than other industries in your experience?
Absolutely. And it depends on a lot of factors. One, whether they're marketing to other businesses or to consumers. In the case of what type of sales they are. For example, is it more transactional, smaller dollar sales, or is it higher value sales, you know, up in the thousands or hundreds of thousands or more per sale?
So which is more important to have SEO, the higher dollar or the more transactional?
Well, they're both important for different reasons. The lower value is typically more from an actual getting lots of people to your website, getting what they call web traffic to your site.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And getting customers on there that are ready to buy. And that's part of effective SEO, is looking, being able to make the website show up for terms that people are searching for when they're actually ready to buy, not just browse.
Okay.
From a standpoint of somebody marketing very high value services, for example, SEO might be more important from a credibility standpoint. So if you've got a potential client that's deciding between you and a competitor, and they search for you online, and all they see is good stuff about your competitor, and you don't even show up on the first two or three pages, that's not going to be very, very good for you from helping them make the decision to go with you versus somebody else.
It's not enticing, should we say, huh?
Exactly.
So you've got this. Are you working on another book? Have you done other books?
I've actually got two more in the works right now. One is about how to make money on Amazon.
Oh, my. I like that idea.
My first online business was an Amazon store, where I went to an internet marketing conference and didn't buy what the salesperson was pitching, but I ended up going home that very night and taking a few books and CDs off my shelf and started my Amazon merchant account.
Okay.
And that ended up paying for quite a few mortgage payments and so on, and still running today.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I learned a few different, actually experimented with and learned from that, a lot of different small tactics that can set you apart, even if you're selling the exact same thing somebody else is selling.
So your adventure of trying to find a job way back when you were coming back from Tokyo, has spawned into all of this
absolutely
information, material, and whatever. I got to ask, 9 things not to do. This is on the job search, right?
Right.
Can you share 2 of those 9 things we ought not to do? Or 1?
Well, let's see. One of the things that people fail to do, and this holds true for not just a job search, but also in sales, for example, is not following up. One of the things that, like, for example, I was working for a company a few years back. This is here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And we had sort of like a group interview day where we brought in 15, 20 candidates, and we would interview them as a group and then break out into one-on-ones and then get together as a group again and talk about which candidates we liked and why.
Mm-hmm.
And one particular day, we ended up making offers to three people that I had interviewed that day.
Oh, my.
And it was interesting to notice that within the next day or two, the 3 people that we'd made offers to, each of them had sent a thank you note.
Ah.
The others that we didn't make offers to
didn't hear anything.
And this was after the fact that we'd made the decision, mm-hmm. but something in that just helped, I guess maybe it helped influence the hiring process as well.
So that follow-up is always critical.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I want to open up the mic here for conversation shortly, but people want to connect with you, David. They want your services. They want your book. How do they do that?
Well, the book, the website for my book is getajobbook.com, or, of course, you can search on Google, Yahoo, or Bing for Get a Job Book, and it'll be right there on top. The website for my marketing business is www.atlantaseos.com. That's Atlanta, SEOS, as in Search Engine Optimization Services.com.
Okay.
Or you can email me directly at david@atlantaseos.com.
There you go. Well, I'm curious, Cindy, do you have questions for David? David, do you have anything you want to run by Cindy? And Stone, if you want to weigh in, go for it.
All right.
I do have a question. Because, I'm not very technical girl. Mm-hmm. I actually built my own website just by taking computer classes from Apple. But 2 weeks ago when I went to NSA meeting, and mm-hmm. I learned one thing. If you type Cindy Light, there are a bunch of Cindy Light in United States. I can't believe it. We have same first mm-hmm. name, same last name. And then my name goes to way up. So my picture's there. You can find all the information. But if I type a cross-cultural communication, or let's say professional speaker on cross-cultural communication, I can't find myself, not even third page, not even fifth. So I started and I went back to a computer class and asked my teacher why that happened. And he mentioned the words you just said. So I need to learn something from you. And how can I get to the right on the top on Yahoo, Google, or whatever?
I'll be glad to help.
Yeah. What do you have to say?
Well, one of the things is the domain name itself is extremely important from an SEO standpoint. I actually did a test of several different domain names that could be read 2 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
They're not exactly politically correct domain names. It was actually a joke circulating around the internet, so I won't say them on the radio.
Okay,
but the
thank
key
you.
Point is that the words in the domain name could be read 2 different ways. So I figured that obviously the website is only optimized for one of those variations of the keywords. So I searched to see where they ranked on Google, Yahoo, and Bing for both variations. As it turns out, there was a very strong correlation, which tells me that the domain name is extremely important in SEO. So one thing you could do is buy a domain name related specifically to the keywords that you're looking to rank for and put up a small site on that, have that link to your main site, and that should help your rankings both for the new site and for your main site as well.
Thank you.
When Cindy was talking about the cultural differences between America and China, Were you having a retrospect of being in Japan and running into those cultural things?
Absolutely. It was a whole different world. It was an exciting time, full of interesting challenges. Made some great friends and obviously had some great, phenomenal food and saw and did a lot of interesting things there as well. But it was, my situation was probably a little different because I knew people there and I had been there before I decided to move there as well.
Oh my.
So it was a little bit smoother transition, but still it was, I made a lot of mistakes. And I probably inadvertently offended quite a few people, but certainly didn't mean to.
Yeah. And you did not blend in very well, did you?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm 6'2", about 210 pounds, blue eyes, brown hair. I obviously don't look Japanese or even Asian.
Yeah.
So obviously I couldn't blend in very well. But even making the effort to understand more about the culture and learning some of the language, even early on before I even got to where I could hold a decent conversation,
mm-hmm.
they recognized that I was trying at least.
Sure. And that's the critical piece. And isn't it, Cindy, if we're
yes.
dealing with people of different culture, if they realize that we're trying.
Yeah, trying is good enough. It's mm-hmm. You just willing to try. Even you did. I gave a speech one time, like the few little things you can do. Number one, learn a few foreign language. Just say hello, like in Chinese. If you go to Japan, you learn how to say hello in Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
Those little things people will so appreciate. At least you're trying. I mean, just like you go to French. Right.
Oh, yes.
We all have experience, like French people know English, but they won't talk to you in English mm-hmm. until you try in French. Right. So it's the same thing.
Good. Well, when you talk about that, I used to take people over to Ghana, and I would have them all learn the greetings so that and how to say please and thank you, the basics. But it made all the difference in the world because in the morning when we would get up, and greetings in the Ghanaian culture are so critical, and my people were savvy enough or dumb enough, I'm not sure which, but they would say, they would greet in Ebe, and that would just get the people talking and laughing, and it just opened up doors everywhere. And it's a simple thing like that. So how do we say good morning in your language?
Do you want to say in Mandarin or Cantonese?
You
I speak
learn
both.
Oh, no.
Let's pick one. Mandarin. Okay. You say good morning. 早晨好.
Wow.
早晨好.
It's 早晨好.
Very good.
Oh,
very
I did it. I did it. I did it.
Thank you.
Well, that's exciting. Any other question between among?
Well, the observation for me, what this really brings to light for me is the value of coaching, getting someone with genuine expertise in a specific area, and just it allows you to demonstrate that mm-hmm. you really are trying. So if I were going to open up a bunch of studios in China, I would want to show up with Cindy.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, no,
absolutely.
It would be worth the extra plane fare and everything else and to pay her fee, I would think, just to have her there, help coach me through it a little bit. And I think leaning on people with expertise in those specific areas is very helpful. And if I were going after a job, I haven't had a real job in 30 years. but I tell you what I have had to do is write the different versions of my bio because they'll introduce me as a speaker. And I find that my wife, Holly, can ask me questions and help craft the bio, and I can help her craft her bio a lot easier than we can do it on ourselves. And Lord help me if I try to do SEO on my, I wouldn't even know where to begin. So for me, the big learning, I'm relearning there is genuine value in getting that coaching and support from people that know what they're talking about.
Absolutely. And you provide me with a great segue to say, this is what I try to lift up in the program that, you know, you, Cindy, have taken your knowledge and your writing about the business. You took your experience, created business, and now you've written about it. People say, yeah, I think I'll write a book someday, but then they get lost on what they can do. But we all have a unique perspective, and that's what I'm encouraging people to get down, that unique perspective that they have. Well, let me, one more time, Cindy, people want to be in touch with you. How do they do that?
Call me, the easiest way, 404-988-9655. And if you want to email me, email to Cindy at CindyLight.com. marketingbusiness.net.
And David?
The website for my marketing business is www.atlantaseos.com, or my email is david@atlantaseos.com, and the website for the book is getajobbook.com.
Well, thank you. To my listeners, I always welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or would like to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let me know. And you can do that by sending me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Stone, for co-hosting, keeping me on track, and asking insightful questions. You really were on a roll today. And again, thank you to my guests, Cindy Light and David Wright. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.rightchoiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, how about sending them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads? Listen to Right Here, Right Now every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock Eastern Time at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com, or download the MP3 version of all the interviews on the Right Here, Right Now website. I am your host, Tim Morrison of Right Here, Right Now. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.